Hello, in this podcast I'm going to talk about sex. And I suppose one of the interesting things is that when you speak to people, adults at least, they're pretty confident that they know all there is to know about sex. And then if you talk about the other things, about the fantastic biology leading up to sex and the biology after sex, that they assume, because they know about sex itself, that they have understood everything and they don't really pick up some of the nuances of what's happening. Now, I'm doing cardiac rehab, and part of my valve stuff is I'm getting a bit tired now, and I'll update you as I go along with the valve surgery as I'm talking to various people if you listen to my podcast. But this is a podcast called Peter Hill Explains, where I talk about things scientific. And in this case, I'm going to talk about the scientific origins of sex. Now, one of the most important things about sex is that you die. That's right. In terms of after sex, it's pretty important that you die, because that's the entire process, general idea of what sex is. And so sex is a neat way of solving a problem of survival by creating many, many solutions and having nature itself or the ecosystem select who's the best ones, and then the best people or the best solutions get to pass the solutions on. But it's important that everyone dies at the end of the process. So I just want you to sort of imagine imagining I'm sort of writing a paper on advanced education and the way that we've sort of used the nature selection or natural selection as an education model. So I'm going to start off with a class of, and please wait for it, 20 ducks. And each duck is a solution to the duck problem, how a duck lives or does in this particular class of 60 of 20 ducks. And what happens is that we run a test on these ducks, and the 10 ducks who don't score, the 10 bottom ducks, we take off and we say, look, we're just going to kill you. And which is true, which is, happens in nature. If these were ducks, these would be ducks which were caught and, you know, wandered in the wrong place, got caught by foxes and stuff like that. So you've got 20, you now have 10 ducks, and out of those 10 ducks, those 10 ducks are going to pair off in groups of in 5 pairs, and each of those ducks, those 5 pairs, are going to have 4 duck offspring, ducklings, and that will get the population back up to 20 again, 5 times 4. And it's the reason I've said 5 times 4. And the important thing is that those ducks who did well in the test, they die as well, because there's only enough resources for 20 ducks, so you carry the next lesson on, and you just repeat the same lesson over and over again until you get ducks who can quack or do the right answer. And then once that's done, you say, well, we're going to deal with another problem, and start the process all over and over, and eventually you have ducks which are trained. That's a sort of evolutionary learning. So if you think of evolution, an animal which seems to have all the answers, well, that's because it's been through the evolutionary school of each generation all dying, but the selection, a fraction of that generation, producing the new solutions, and the old solutions which aren't so good, well, they're dead. And so it's actually education by death. Death and sex gets you going up. And there's a reason I've selected 4. And this, I suppose, is the death and sex aspect of it. Although people think sex education, it really is, for it to operate as a full solution, you've got to have reproduction and death. Everyone has to die. Except in a generation, but the successful ones get to have their genes or their solutions passed on. It's sort of like taking a survey, and you take the survey results from the people that you think are really good, and then you kill everyone, and then the next survey people have those next surveys to work on for the next generation, and you follow that on, eventually you get a correct document. So you can imagine you have an essay and you want to improve it. You could improve it through this sex and death method. Now, there's a reason I've said that each male and female pair of those five ducks have four offsprings, because there is this process to do with sex. The other side is production of a sperm and an egg. Now, I'm going to assume that lots of people have access to the classic sex education. It's about how the sperm and egg gets together. There's a lot of hoo-ha about that, and a lot of, I suppose, mature discussion of raising it up. And I'm going to just avoid that completely and say, look, they get together and go on to produce a young duckling in this case. But coming back to production of the sperm, this is where it really gets interesting. A few people question this and fully understand what's going on. So the male duck is has a every cell inside a male duck has a copy of a complete copy of the of a DNA makeup of a duck from their father and a complete copy from their mother. So ducks are slightly different, but humans, it's definitely this one. The genetic code is actually repeated. And so if you can imagine your genetic code is in your DNA and it's a complete set of instructions, there's a complete set of instructions, but there's two copies. So it's imagined you've got some software. In the old days, when you remember, we used to get a disc and there used to be three or four thick books. Well, in the DNA biology world, you get your disc, or so to speak, but you get a double copy of the manuals. Now, some of the manuals have pages missing and stuff like that. So eventually, a cell can work out what it's got to do because it's got two copies of it. It's got a backup copy. So each cell inside that male duck has a copy of its father and mother. So just to make it clear, so we understand, this duck's going to be a father, and inside every cell of that duck is a complete, and you'll understand how this happens, that has a complete copy of the paternal grandfather and the paternal grandmother. So even though it's been that the two DNA have got together, they haven't actually mixed. So although in your in you, you've got your mother and your father's mix of DNA, selection of DNA, but they have never mixed. They're together, and the two manuals compete, saying, "Hey, read me, hey, read me," and go back and forth. And so you've got, and you are an expression of your mother and father, but each cell of you is completely, has got a complete copy of your mother and a complete copy of your father. And we'll just get into this a little bit further. So we've got the paternal sperm. And the paternal sperm has to be made starting off with a cell which has a copy of DNA from the paternal grandmother and the paternal grandfather. Now, this is the process which happens, and you'll have to get your mind across it. So you've got the DNA is a classic X shape. Now, the X shape is, if you'd like it, is, you can imagine a tango or something happening. It's the point that when the two dancers touch, it's very rare that you see it. So most of the time, inside a cell, the DNA is in read-me mode. And when it's in read-me mode, it's completely uncoiled. It's a big spongy thing. It's all over the place, like a mess in the garden's full. And this is completely coiled. So if you get, mostly, if you look in a cell and you stain the DNA, The DNA is a big blob. It's completely unwound, and being unwound, it's like this unwound wire. It just fills up the suitcase of the nucleus. If you stain it, it looks unusual. It's when it goes to reproduction, that's reproduction of the cell or making another copy of the cell. Mitosis, when it makes another copy of itself, but if it's going to make another me or another individual, completely mixed individual, it's meiosis. So we're going to go down meiosis case, but in both these cases, it's got to go to a stage of making a copy of its DNA. The DNA has to be copied, and then the rest of the cell can split apart with double the DNA. I'll see if you understand this process, you'll really understand it well. It's only that case that you get the magic X happening along. And if you're looking at a culture and you've stained the DNA, and you look at the culture of cells, most cells will not have the visible chromosomes in that double X. Say 1 in 100, if it spends 1% of its time, or even 5% of its time is reproducing. It's only for a small fraction do you actually see the DNA actually splitting up. So it's imagine in a minute it will reproduce, or say if a cell reproduces every 20 minutes for about 1 minute of its reproduction, a very small amount of time, will you be able to see cells, I think it's called karyotype. I've just got to work this one out. There's a particular word for the actual geometrical, sort of artificial textbook version of. So the DNA forms these X's, but they don't form like it's in the textbook. In that textbook, when they're neat little lines, the scientists have put them in these lines to sort them out. Now, when it's in the X, it's what happens is it starts off as basically an eye with a kink in the middle, and that's a complete copy of the DNA. And so the DNA in your cell is roughly a meter long. It's a meter long of this coily wire broken up into 23 segments. Well, really 46 segments. So it's 23 repeated, one for your father and one for your mother. And at a point that it's getting ready to reproduce, it recoils up and forms these little eyes. And these eyes grow from the center, and when they're finished growing, they've formed an X. So the X that you see, or the X crossed DNA you see, is actually not one DNA, but it is a double copy of either your maternal or paternal DNA. So I think it's a karyotype. When it's all sorted out, you have 46 segments of DNA in pairs. There's only thing which isn't paired is you'll have a X chromosome from your mother, and if you're a man, you'll have a Y chromosome from your father. Or if you're a female, you'll have an X from your mother and an X from your father. So I know women claim to have more DNA, but it is true that males have more DNA at a price that they have more, but it's not copied, it's not backed up. So that they have an X and manual because they've traded in one X for a Y, and so they've got an X and Y manual, where if you consider a chromosome, a small area of DNA as a unit or a manual, the males have an X and Y manual, and the females have a more reliable double X to go ahead. But it's at this point that you have the double, this X, this characteristic X shape, and it's actually two copies. it's actually completed copying it, and we've photographed it at that point in time. We copy it at this point in time because it's photogenic. It's something awesome about it. It's symmetrical. It sort of yells at you information. There must be information here. If you see DNA in its natural lounge state, where it's operating all the time and thousands of different times, that's hard to see, imagine what it is. But it's, when it's nicely ordered and packaged, almost like it's packing up ready to go. So what it does is it packs up. It forms 43 little segments, linear segments. And these linear segments double, but they're doubled anchored at the centre. And so these little doubled units, we've got a train going around here, won't be too loud here, form a double unit. So you've got here in the reproductive process or reproduction of the cell, it's got double itself, doubles its DNA, and at the point that the DNA has actually doubled, it forms an X. Now, this is the part of sex that I suppose people don't get, or they don't refer to. When you're making a copy of a cell just to make another copy of itself, once you've made a copy of the DNA, it's just all right. You just split it apart, and the left-hand copy goes to the left hand, and the right-hand copy goes to the right-hand side, and then you go off and make it, you start all over again. And that's mitosis. When you meiosis, you've got to go through a few other steps, and these are the incredible steps. So it's sort of mind-blowing. What happens is that you've got of these X's, you've got a mum copy and a mum copy and a dad copy. It's a paternal grandfather and paternal grandmother, as far as you're concerned. And at the X's, you've got two. So you've got two grandmums and two granddads. And what happens is that they say, "Well, these are rather good," and they actually line up and sit over the top of each other. So you've got the granddad and grandmum actually lie on top of each other, and then this is the sort of the how sex actually works. A molecule goes across and selects a point at random on each of these branches, the X branches. It's got four branches, and cuts the DNA all the way through. The male, the grandpa and grandma, cuts all the way through. Say on the top branch of the X, it cuts all the way through, and then it re-stitches together the say from the top, say down 10% of the distance to the X. It re-stitches the grandmum onto the granddad, and the granddad onto grandmum. This is called splicing. And it really is splicing. So what it does is it's mad mixing. So it randomly, or at least we think it's randomly, goes through and cuts this DNA up and makes basically a Frankenstein of your mum, your grandma, and your granddad. That's been in your dad, in the sperm of your dad. The making of this first step of the meiosis is actually making a Frankenstein of your granddad and your grandmum. And so this is the splicing step. This is the alignment of your grandmum and granddad DNA, double DNA on top of each other. And it goes through and cuts it up. And what happens is that you then have your new DNA cut out, and you've still got a copy, but the copies are really mad. They're Frankenstein copies, where if you've got a certain length of grandmum, and then it's a length of granddad, and then on the mirror one, you've got the same length of granddad and then grandmum. It's sort of mixed together. So it really is sort of like a Frankenstein Einstein, but it's not a Frankenstein as the idea of the actual body parts being cut. It's as so people have got the two manuals from your grandmum and your granddad, and you've gone through, and at page 35, you've said rip for bounder, both at page 35, and then you've swapped the manuals over and you've re-glued it back together. So you've got page 35 to 1,000, page 1 to 1,000 on both, but they're both the copies of the manuals have been mixed across. So this is splicing, this is of the genius of sex. And so what's happened is that you, at the point of doubling, you've got double the normal DNA content, and this has to halve down to special sperm, and in the female, special egg cells. So what happens is that this X normal thing, it's actually pinned together at the side, and there's hooks at the point that this X is pinned together, and so at the hooks it grabs the molecule, the DNA, from the sides, and pulls that X apart, goes like Velcro, and you're back to a copy of your father, your grandfather, and grandmother, normally in a normal cell production, but now you've got one Frankenstein and another version of Frankenstein together, and it pulls it apart, and when you think about it, you can actually make four sperm cells from one starting off cell. Firstly, so a normal cell has two copies of the DNA, and a normal cell at the point starts to double that double copy, so you're double-double, and so the double-double gives you this crazy splicing in female into your sperm. So each sperm has a crazy Frankenstein match of your grandmother and grandfather in each one, and it's sort of pretty crazy, crazy way to go. And they're each or two of the to each sperm is in pairs where they've got the conjugate opposite of the splicing, and so this is mad. So when this cut could actually cut through a vital piece of information. Or the process, this process could not be perfect, and so it introduces a few mistakes in the process of it. It's a fairly good idea. So what happens is that you now have a half, your sperm carries half the required amount of information. We won't go over this place. It travels miraculously to the egg. They come together, and it starts a new individual, a baby. So from the dad and mum comes the baby, and that baby is started off with your father's Frankenstein of your grandmother and grandfather, and your mother's Frankenstein of your of her grandmother and grandfather coming together. So, in essence, going back to your ducks, which are your smarter ducks, these have been allowed to reproduce, and because somewhere in their DNA, they, because that's the only way that evolution ideally works, it's awarding awards the prize of reproduction to those with the best DNA, and it doesn't know what part of the DNA is used, how it's used. So what it does, it gives the winners the chance to enter their DNA into the next lottery, in which it's filtered again and again, and of course it has the ability to add unique solutions together which haven't been thought before. So you can actually win by the invention of new DNA. It's sort of creating, well, it is evolution creating it together. Now, of course, this cutting process, the splicing process, is imperfect, and it can produce damaged DNA. And I don't know what the miscarriage or the misconception process is, but a fairly large number of zygotes, I think these are gametes and zygotes, these basic embryonic cells, they progress a certain amount of far and they say, my God, this cannot work. And the DNA is such that when it's figured out, or these little embryos figured out what they're going, their development stops. So it's actually, there's a whole series of sequences and checkpoints, and when the development is going well, it tends to actually call the whole rock show off and start degenerating the whole process. So basically it's assembling the individual, and it has these checkpoints in it. So there's a value in that. If you're producing a lot of these things, the quicker it can work out it's not going to work, the better it is. It gives the other ones which do work a better chance by doing it. And so what's happened is that your parents have won the lottery of being reasonably successful, and they produce the next generation of solutions which randomly may have the X factor, the thing which helps the next generation get through. It may be things which only come up once every couple of classes. You might need it all the time. Maybe something which gives you that X factor as your class of 20 ducks to actually work along. And then those you have those 20 hatchlings, which are Frankenstein mixtures of the grandparents coming across. And I think very few people really know or care. To be quite honest, the response is when I try and explain, I very rarely get a chance to explain the splicing process of their grandmother and grandfather laying on top of each other. It sort of just really grosses people out. And then this axe coming through and stitching beyond one part onto the other. People can really imagine it, as your grandmother and grandfather physically being on top of each other, and this axe coming off and restitching the arms, one arm on the grandfather's arm on the grandmother, and then the grandmother's arm on the other. They can imagine that. It's harder than to imagine that the DNA is actually a manual, and you're actually transposing, you're ripping the manual up on several cuts and restitching it together, and then just chucking that together in a cell and seeing how that one goes. So there's not that understanding going ahead. Then the idea that sex really only works if the parents all die. Yeah, in fact, everyone dies. It's sort of this gross Game of Thrones idea. But that's the important thing, is that they're really only interested in the solution as you're auditioning for your role in nature. And if they say, yep, you're selected, well, you get selected through, but they're only interested in getting the information or your script. So really, you're living, you are actually trying to live out or exhibit the script that's inside you. So they're really interested, so that they put, basically, if you can think of it, you act it out, and inside you is the script. And what happens is they can say, look, the script's really good, and you get together and you fuse your scripts, you submit the new scripts, and you get to copy it four times four times, but you then merge it with someone else's script. It's really merged and scrambled together, and then the scripts don't really make a lot of sense. So there's a directive which says, over to you, over to your mum's, over to your father's script, and it plays out everything. So they're really only interested in the script. DNA is only interested in producing itself. And after you have actually auditioned for your life and shown that you're worthy, you get a chance to pass it on. But the main idea is that you must die. So these are two sort of other aspects of it to, de-romanticise. It's Valentine's Day at the moment. De-romanticise this idea that you've got this crazy mathematical thing, which is rather gross for people to think of, even though it's only talking about maths and molecules and meiosis, and the fact that everything must die at the end of it. It's rather a sad thing. But that being said, you can see that nature is beautiful, but it's not not necessarily the end of all things. It's got one way of generating solutions, but now we've we've eventually almost a new way of generating solutions have come across across. And so really, really looking at the generation of solutions, each organism is basically an agent which follows certain rules. And if the rules are good, that agent gets cannibalized for its set of rules, and those rules go ahead, and it applies the rules as really on or off. It either does it or it doesn't do the thing, and those rules are within a particular agent. And so what we've done with modern science and our modern collaborative work is actually go beyond this and actually consider the rules as interpretations of data. And we can actually work at a very high level at looking at our interpretations of data and produce not a solution, but a solution offering. So we've really upped our understanding of complexity, and we've moved on from the idea of killing off the worst solution. And so this idea of killing the worst solution off is actually the basis of war, you know. So-and-so's solution is dreadful, and if it goes, it'll take over the planet, so we've got to go to war and kill it. And that's sort of a very much, I suppose, a rule-based view of biological agents, which leads to people to have wars. There is a much more nuanced, complex way where you look at a new sort of maths to do it, a new, let's, I suppose, going beyond sex, which looks at complexity and getting ideas together. I'll try and write that up. That's a paper I'm writing up at the moment. I'll try and express it. But one of the things is getting across the line is that people really don't understand what's going on with sex. If you're interested, go to Wikipedia and look at mitosis and meiosis and actually work out step by step and really stop at that splicing stage and watch what's going on and think through what's going on. Also, question your own understanding. The critical thing to know is that when that X is expressed, that X is the chromosome doubled. You are seeing double. And if you see different banding on different sides, which is often seen, that's a chromosome, so there's groups of DNA which colour different ways, which create sort of stripes in the sock if you put in stripes in the DNA when you, or chromosome when you look at it. It says a some is a type, chrome is colour. A chromosome, when they're different, they've actually caught it at the point when it's spliced. Because when spliced, the two sides are different, they're asymmetrical, and it's about to go. So yeah, you often see DNA out, and you just have to question what's going on. So that's my Valentine's Day talk on sex, and I hope it's provided some information, some insight into the grinding science behind understanding everything. In the meantime, keep on doing science.